Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You're listening to Comedy Central.
Constance Wu, welcome to The Daily Show.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Let's start with the question that I've been trying to figure out the entire time reading the book. The title of the book.
Why am I so red?
No, yeah. Making a scene. You know, there's so many different interpretations for this. Like making a scene. Are you saying good making a scene, bad making a scene? Is it full making a scene? You write a memoir about your life. That is the title. Why that?
Well, you kind of got it, because it's supposed to have multiple meanings. Mm-hmm. There's two overarching themes in the book. One is how art is very healing, and for me, art was always doing theater. And in theater, you make scenes in a play. And the other theme is sort of about what it means when somebody makes a scene, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and how growing up, I sort of felt that it was unladylike to make scenes, and how that repression was something that I've been struggling with my whole life as a naturally extroverted emotional person. And so now I'm just like, I'll just be emotional and just make a scene. You know?
I didn't know what to expect when I picked up the book, you know, because when you read somebody's memoir, you have an idea of who they are, and then you have an idea of what you think their memoir will be. You've written it in a really interesting way in that I've seen a book that has essays, and I've seen a book that's written in a completely linear format, but you've told some of the stories, or you've written them as screenplays, and it feels like we're in a movie that is your life. Why did you choose to do that? Is that how you saw it, or do you want us to feel like we're in the movie that is your life?
Well, there are certain scenes or parts of the book that were originally written as dialogue that happened to me as I recount my experiences.
Got it.
And then I put them in a sort of screenplay or playwriting format, because I feel like sometimes with actor memoirs, there's a little bit of a kind of a slant. Like, they're trying to make themselves be the victim or the hero, mm-hmm. or like cooler than. Mm-hmm. And I felt like by putting it in a scene format, it sort of took you out of the book in a way that made the experience more objective. So if I'm talking about somebody putting, okay. you know, his hand on my crotch, I could talk about how that felt to me, or I could just explain the action, and everybody will have their own response to it.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that, because that was something interesting in the book. You know, you shared some really vulnerable moments in your life.
Yeah.
You talked about going through sexual harassment, you know, one of the producers on the show, the hit show that you were on, Fresh Off the Boat. But what's interesting is, it doesn't seem like you are trying to slam somebody.
Yeah,
it seems like you're recounting what happened. You even seem to have, honestly, a compassion that I don't think many people would, where you go, I understand where this guy came from. I didn't appreciate what he did. He made my life a living hell, but I forgive him. And then you go on to talk about parts, you know, later in the book, where you realize that there were moments where you felt like you were creating an environment that was harassing to people, not on the same level in any way.
No.
But I was intrigued by why you would do that, and how you would even begin to think like that.
Well, I mean, you are right. I even, in a way, have a compassion for the person who raped me. And that is something that is, you know, you don't do. And the reason I do it is not to have compassion and not to take their side, but I do feel that if I am asking for people to look at my life and my mistakes with curiosity and empathy rather than judgment, mm-hmm. I feel like I want to do the same for other people. And it was beautiful, because as I was doing that, it made me stop blaming myself. So, you know, I felt really bad with the sexual harassment on Fresh Off the Boat, because sometimes I wanted to be part of the boys' club. Mm-hmm. So, like, when he would do or say something that was inappropriate, I'd be like, oh my God, you're such a dick. You know, like, laughing with him. And I felt like that was a type of permissiveness, and I felt guilty because of that. But then when I thought about how he's an Asian American man and how Asian American men have traditionally felt very emasculated in this country, and what that does to a person, and why and how they might exercise their feelings of powerlessness and exercise it on the women in their own community, because he was always respectful to white and black women all around me. It was just to Asian women who weren't in positions of power that he sort of exercised his power. And it, you know, I consider that, and I consider the pressure he was under, not to excuse him, but just to understand people better.
Wow. Wow.
You bring up your life and everything that you've gone through. There are many people who are familiar with it, and there are obviously those who learn about it from the book or maybe even from us speaking about it. But you went through a really interesting period where you were on this hit show. It came out of nowhere. It was a supernova, fresh off the boat. People were loving it. It represented, you know, the Asian community, and it was this exciting new idea, and it was funny, it was powerful. And then I think it was after about five seasons, people thought the show was done. You started booking a few projects. Then the show got picked up and you had to go back to the show contractually. You spoke up about it on Twitter, you know, and...
I mean, I more than spoke up about it. I had some rather profane tweets.
Yeah, I'll objectively giving it to you.
Thank you. We'll write it in a screenplay format.
Yes, I'll put it in a screen. You said a few things, and what you talk about in the book, and I really enjoyed it, is you talk about how you felt, you talk about the mistakes you made, but then you talk about the response and how people made you feel, leading to a point where you contemplated suicide.
I actually really did pull myself over a balcony ledge. So it was very close, and I'm very lucky that I had a friend there to help me. But, but yeah, I mean, I do think the reaction to my not ladylike tweets mm-hmm. was outsized in proportion to my mistake.
Right.
And it's...
Yeah, you were getting slammed. Like, yeah. people were coming after you. People were like, oh, they were saying, like, you should kill yourself. You're ungrateful. I remember it at the time. And it was huge. It went far beyond, like, what had happened, you know? It felt like you were angry and you were lashing out.
Yeah.
But the response was, it seemed like you'd killed someone.
It was pretty cruel.
Yeah.
And so that's why I ended up in a hospital and why I inevitably had to take a break from Hollywood to sort of, God, I didn't want to cry, I'm sorry, to like work on my mental health. And it was lonely, and I'll tell you what, it remains a little bit lonely, because one of the things I wanted to talk about was how the Asian American community has largely remained silent because they're so hyper-focused on this idea of positive representation. And I think that is such an illusion. It's like the model minority coin, but just the other side of it. We need whole human representation, which includes mistakes, which includes insecurities and vulnerabilities. And it includes the intersections of race and gender, because one of the few people that I told back in season two that I was being sexually harassed was one of the most vocal and prominent advocates for Asian Americans. Very progressive, very outspoken. And I sort of told him, I guess, as a testing ground to see, you know, if he would believe me.
Right.
And he just looked at me like my dog had died, and then never said anything again. And a week later, I saw him introducing my abuser on an Asian American panel with the most profuse praise. And it felt like such a betrayal. And I'm like, if even he doesn't believe me, who's gonna believe me? And this is prior to the Me Too movement. And I just wanna say to a lot of Asian American male activists, if you claim to stand for Asian Americans, you have to stand for women too, because that's 50% of that population.
When you experienced this, it was really, it was, really interesting to read through how you felt about it in the book, you know, because you share the complexities of what you were going through. And one of those complexities was around the burden of carrying for an entire group. You know, I spoke to a friend of mine, and she was telling me, you know, she's Chinese and she moved to the US, and she was saying how she's always been taught that the group is more important than the whole, regardless of the cost. And you talk about in the book about how many said to you, it doesn't matter what happened to you, what's more important is how the Asian community is perceived.
Yes, that positive representation of the whole, and how, when you stray from that.
Right, and so how did you find the balance and also the fortitude to say, look, I am here representing the Asian community as a whole, as a complex person, but I also wish to be protected as an individual. Like, where did you find that strength? Where did you, because you, as you say, you were contemplating suicide. You were in a mental hospital. You went through so many things. What is it that changed in Constance's life where you decided, no, you know what? I've got to change how I deal with this.
Well, to be honest, I think I'm still finding it. But I think one thing I learned is that repressing those stories of abuse that happened to me, it wasn't just going to go away because I wanted it to go away, mm-hmm. because I wanted to maintain the reputation of the show. And I realized if I'm going to live as my authentic self, then I just need to do it, even at the risk of some other people's discomfort. And so I do think my speaking out is going to make some people uncomfortable, but I think discomfort is often where you find growth. And it's sort of the only way I know how to be right now.
I love that for you. I'll put that away. I use that for myself.
Like evidence of my dude.
I would be doing the book and your life a disservice if we just stayed on the saddest parts and the saddest moments.
I know, that's
that
all anybody wants to talk about.
Well, not me.
Because it
is a life, you know. There are many funny moments. You tell amazingly funny stories. I feel bad for almost every guy who's dated you, especially like.
What I mean
is because you tell the stories in a really funny way. And if I was one of, like the maitre d', for instance, there's so many great stories you tell about dating and life going well, life not going well. It's silly things. There's funny moments. You know, you talk about moving in your 20s. You share really fun stories about your journey growing up, moving around. For instance, just the way you speak about your sisters. You're one of four, right?
I'm one of four girls.
And I love how in the book you talk about how Helen is just like your favorite sister. And I was like, you do realize your sisters are gonna read this book. Are you not worried about that, them knowing that you have a favorite now?
Did I say favorite?
Yeah,
No. I said she's the one I've become closest to in adulthood.
Oh, that's even worse. Oh, she's the one I'm closest to? That's not much better. But what I love is that you share a lot, and it's funny and it's complex. When you look at your life, when you look at the laughter that you bring to yourself, like, what are some of the funniest moments that you loved reading about in your own book? Because I feel like writing a book means you have to relive some of what you've been through.
Oh yeah, you have to read it so many times
right.
When you're editing. It's like a whole thing. And I wrote it all myself. Yeah. That's why it took me so long. I mean, there's one essay I really enjoyed writing about my first ever job, which was at a bread bakery,
yes.
Where I learned about what it really means to bake bread. When you think about it, for centuries, the recipe has stayed the same.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, I was almost embarrassed. I'm almost embarrassed of my job now because an acting career feels so flimsy next to something as substantial as a loaf of bread. When you really think about what that has meant for cultures. And also, like, writing that one brought back all the smells of the bakery
yes.
and the taste.
Do you still bake?
No.
Oh. Oh, wow. I feel like that's like a missed opportunity, just like now and again.
Well, I mean, I do explain in the book, you know, I was at the kneading table. So
yes.
I kneaded the bread and I shaped it, but
right.
I was never the mixer. That's like a very important role where they mix the dough.
Yes.
And that was never my job because I was like a 15-year-old. It's too important of a job for a 15-year-old.
When you walk past a place that's baking something, do you get memories immediately?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I even tried to audition to be a baker when I first moved to LA. And I was like, let me try a different side job other than waitressing.
Right.
I have these baking skills. Let me try it. So they auditioned me for this baking role. And I remember the mixer, he and I were working together, and I'm trying to make small talk the way you might do with, you know, your waitressing staff, and saying like, oh, you know, I'm an actress, what do you do?
Yes.
And he looked at me and he said, I am a baker. But I remember thinking like, that's right. Yeah, you are. That's an honorable job, you know?
And you were like, I'm just here as my side hustle.
And I didn't get the job.
You didn't. And you know what? You ended up in the right one. Constance, yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time. Thank you for joining me on the show. Congratulations on a really fascinating book. Making a Scene is available wherever you buy your books. There are tons more stories, so make sure you go out and get it. Constance Wu, everybody.
The Daily Show with Trevor Noah, Ears Edition. Subscribe to The Daily Show on YouTube for exclusive content and stream full episodes anytime on Paramount Plus.
This has been a Comedy Central podcast.
You deserve a moment to yourself every single day. And a delicious bite of a Keebler Sandies can give you that comforting pause. Take a pause from your to-do list with the melt-in-your-mouth magic of a Keebler Sandies. This magic is baked into simple shortbread cookies by Ernie and the Keebler Elves. So as life continues to fly by, make the most of your me moment. Take a pause and enjoy a Keebler Sandies.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.